and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, certified financial planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
We appreciate you joining us. Of course, it is October 8th.
It's great to be in the saddle again. We have with us Shay Pataja, our Chief Experience Officer. Welcome, Shay.
AKA Hello. The CEO, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. Someone just like called me Dennis's boss in the lobby, and that was a first.
We were having fun with that.
It's laughable. I know that, Kim.
We were having fun with teasing out there. And then we also have with us, joining us today, two-thirds of on her way to her RICP, as in Paul, Heidi Thompson. Thank you for joining us, Heidi.
What does the RICP stand for?
Good question.
It's Retirement Income Certified Professional. So
we have a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about important retirement account deadlines. We're going to talk about the federal deficit. Heidi's going to be talking about the 8 things you must know about beneficiary IRAs and taking withdrawals and how to take them and why it's important and all that sort of thing, right?
That's right.
We're on that. And then Shay has some awesome stats we'll be talking about in a few moments. But first, important retirement account deadlines. From COVID, there are some significant options for you if you should choose to draw money early from retirement accounts. These new rules and or regulations allow you to draw those funds without penalty. No penalty. First off, returning unwanted RMDs after August 31st. If you had to take an RMD but change your mind after the 31st of August, of course, we're beyond that now, you still have 60 days to return those funds. So for any of you who may be getting automatic RMDs, or you say, you know, darn it all, I didn't want that extra income, I forgot about that RMD that's automatic perhaps, you can return it as long as you do it within 60 days and you haven't done another rollover. It is a rollover within the past year, not the past calendar year, the past year. Now, I recognize that some of this information can be nebulous. I mean, you're busy chewing gum, driving, and speaking to your significant other spouse in the car. So if you want to have an intimate face-to-face conversation, come and see us in our office.
Okay? We serve coffee and chocolate.
You have candy.
Most importantly.
And we do have candy and good candy as well.
It is really good candy.
Chocolate. And we have it individually wrapped.
Well, and I mean,
COVID compliant chocolate.
Since the virus came around, I've noticed that some places, like the bank, for instance, used to have a bowl of really good candy. They don't have that anymore because they don't want people sticking their hands in. But you guys do it all individually wrapped.
We've got them in little neat red bags with. So good. You know,
guess who thought of that? Right there at the end, yeah.
She's the chief of experience.
Yes.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
We like to think people come to see us, but we know it's the chocolate.
Just the chocolate.
It helps. It really does.
It helps. Spoonful of sugar.
So do you guys want to dive right in, or would you like to take a break and come back on this?
Well, I thought we were diving in, but one more point, and then we'll take a break.
All right.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
And you were diving in.
Yes. Coronavirus-related distributions. As mentioned, under the CARES Act, qualified individuals can withdraw up to $100,000 of coronavirus-related distribution from IRAs and or company plans and repay them over a 3-year period. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
I'd forgotten all about it.
I didn't know that.
3 years.
That is some weird.
So 20, 21, and 22. You could theoretically pay those back over a 3-year period and not pay any tax. Now, you may have to talk to your tax professional about this because they may have to file, you know, extra returns for you and that sort of thing. So there may be some extra costs otherwise, but that's important to know. If you've been impacted, now they don't state what the impact is here, so I'm sorry, I can't help you with that right now. I don't have the exact qualifications.
But coronavirus related distributions are exempt from the 10% early distribution penalty. So theoretically, you could be 45 years old and draw these funds for these related distributions and not pay the penalty. And if you pay it back in over 3 years, you will not pay the tax. You heard it here first, folks.
How long has this been in effect?
Well, since we said it here on the radio.
This was incepted earlier
this year. And of course, I'm not sure the exact date. I almost feel like I should run for president. It was earlier this year, Colleen.
All right, then.
Kicking off the campaign now?
I'm just, not really answering the question. This sounds familiar to you, doesn't it?
It kind of does. But then you tune out and you just hear.
Your whole campaign could be for retirees, though.
I'll do it. So coronavirus related distributions, who are impacted individuals? Number one, those diagnosed with the virus, those whose spouse or dependents are diagnosed, those who experience adverse financial consequences as a result of being quarantined, being furloughed or laid off, being unable to work due to lack of child care, closing or reducing hours of business owned or operated by the individual due to the virus, or other factors to be determined by the Secretary of Treasury, which I'm sure he has to negotiate with Nancy Pelosi to get this one passed. Okay. All right. So there are several ways that someone could draw funds from these accounts and pay them back. Coronavirus. And you don't have to necessarily be under age 59 and a half to take advantage of it. If you've been negatively impacted.
Which is a big deal because that 59 and a half is actually that age is kind of like where the buck stops here.
Yes.
That's right.
But as well, the fact that you don't have to pay the tax on it if you pay it back in and you've got some real time to do that. So another way to access funds that you may not have been aware of could be significant. Let's take a break now, shall we?
You know what? Before we do that, Jim from Petoskey has been holding on line one here for a couple minutes.
Sure.
Jim, are you there? Hello, Jim.
Yes.
Hi. Did you have a question for Dennis?
I do. And it has to do with the 2019 RMD, required minimum distribution.
Okay.
You know, at the end, was there some special treatment about that because of COVID?
2019?
Yeah, if you had not taken your 2019 RMD but before the new CARES Act went into effect, that waived the RMD for this year, so you do not have to take that 2019 if you hadn't taken it and you had the ability to wait until April to take it.
Yeah,
and
if you delayed taking your 2019 RMD until you were thinking until April 1st of this year, is that what you're referencing, Jim?
Yes. I didn't remember what it was. I remember it was something, but I took mine in 2019 before year end.
Okay.
So that, I guess, just normal treatment, correct?
Normal treatment. Yeah, you can't turn that one around.
Yeah, and that April date is only good for that first year that you take your RMD. So you would have had to, it had to be the first year that it was required.
So. I didn't hear that.
Sorry.
He didn't hear you. Say that again, please.
It is only, you have until April to take your RMD, but only for the first year that you take your RMD. In subsequent years, you do no longer have that option. It's required during the calendar year.
Correct.
Does that make sense to you, Jim?
It sure does. Thank you.
Thanks for
your
call.
Welcome.
Appreciate
have
it.
A great day. And thanks, Heidi, for highlighting that. All right. So we're going to hit the GDP to debt ratio here momentarily, and then Shay's going to do the stats right after that. But I think this is important. I know that we hear a lot of different noise, if you will, in regards to the public-private debt to GDP ratio. But I want to talk about this. I think the stats alone can be helpful for those of you concerned about where the level of debt is. So I'm going to read. I've got about three paragraphs here. Take about 2 or 3 minutes. And obviously you need to re-listen to it. Again, the rebroadcast on Saturday. And then these appear on the website in about 2 to 3 weeks. So Jana goes over these for us. And
She edits them.
Edits them out.
And submits them to compliance. They re-listen to them.
So they go through the whole process. Yes. They go through the shake and the stir, and then they get on the website, proutfinancialdesign.com.
What did you say about shaken and stirred?
It's just a James Bond.
It's happy hour somewhere, Colleen.
Somewhere.
What is that?
Yeah, that's interesting that you picked that up, yeah. So the U.S. economy entered the COVID-19 crisis with a public-private debt to GDP. GDP is gross domestic product, all of our economy's production for a given year, near 370%. Huge. 370. If the foreign and financial sectors are excluded, the ratio is near 260%, which, according to several legitimate research reports, is a critical threshold level. Once you get beyond that, the cost of the debt itself and its use in the economy in terms of creating growth declines significantly. All right? So the U.S. Treasury, in conjunction with the Federal Reserve Central Bank, has already borrowed a very large amount of money in order to mitigate the COVID-19 crisis. Surprise, they've already borrowed a ton. These actions have pushed U.S. non-financial debt to GDP ratio, the ratio, above 270%, which is significantly beyond all critical thresholds defined by economists and deemed to cause long-term negative impacts to the U.S. economy. On that happy thought, do I need to even go on?
Beyond
it's
all
big.
Critical
thresholds. It's big. Yeah, yeah.
Great.
Given the guidance of the 2011 BIS research report, The Real Effects of Debt, that's 2011, let's look at the level of debt to GDP for the three main non-financial sectors of the U.S. economy, which are household, business, and government. And it is clear that we have surpassed the critical 260% of GDP threshold, as the chart on the following page indicates. Now, this is from my statistician, Rob, and he combines all this information, and oh my goodness, it's invaluable. After the COVID-19 crisis, the non-financial debt to GDP ratio will probably rise toward 300% before it normalizes and recedes slightly, but will still be above the critical 260 threshold. The U.S. economy will not be able to grow significantly with this level of debt. Furthermore, any policy that allows the Federal Reserve Central Bank to create dollars without an accompanying increase in debt shifts the balance of risk strongly in favor of rising inflation. Now, I just, so you guys can see here, I wish I could show this graph. This graph shows that
upward
percentage increase from the beginning of the 2000s, and I kind of circled there. It's dramatic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That increase in debt, so it begins to compete with people's ability to borrow funds. It begins to denigrate or deplete the value of our dollar, and that much debt owed by the federal government has a downward pulling effect from our economy to compete on a level that's helpful to the economy itself. So when we have that much debt overseeing the overall economy, or overhanging, if you will, it's not a good thing for long-term growth. So hopefully whomever is president begins to deal with our debt situation and not deal with spending from the spending side to help us avoid pain and suffering, because we may well have to have some pain and suffering to continue to grow in the future. So that is a danger, and that danger, we've already reached that threshold in terms of total spending in our U.S. economy. Now, how do you approach this? We're doing several things for our clients. We're talking about the impact of this inflation. I can't really get into the investment themes that we have been providing and recommending to our clients on the radio, but given these stats, there are things that we talked about. What Warren Buffett has done for the first time in decades, they are investing in gold because they see the problem in this, and then they're also investing in Japanese commodities companies, which is kind of obtuse perhaps to think about and talk about, but their thinking is those commodities should help them avoid some of the issues related to a falling dollar and significant rising debt in the United States. Okay.
As an everyday person, it's really difficult to connect with something that feels so out of your control. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can hear that, you can see the warning signs and feel danger and then say, yeah, but what do I do about it? I have to budget my life every day and think about what I spend my money on every single day. Well, why don't they?
Yeah, and it is out of your control, yet it controls so much of how you live and how you will plan for yourself.
Mm-hmm. It does, and it makes the planning more difficult because of this shift in responsibility, of course. So how do we approach this when we know it's out of our control? How do we begin still really, I'm looking at Colleen as I'm talking, to pull us back to ourselves and say, okay, what can I do? Because, obviously we don't know who's going to win the presidential election on November, what is that, November 3rd? Something like that, yeah. So given that uncontrol that we have, if you will, what can we do? Well, it still comes back to us. What can I do about it? And how can I best work through this? And how can I change? Are there any adjustments that I could make? And we have those conversations a lot with clients these days. Shay, we have some stats here.
Good. Yeah. So we have a lot of Shay stats today. And this first one I find interesting because the research is collected by BTN and it's collected from 1936 to 2019. So this is interesting. Based upon the performance data from 1936 to 2019, the S&P 500 has averaged a 6% per year total return during the first year of a four-year presidential term. So these are just averages. 6.7%. 8.7% per year during the second year. 18.5% during the third year, and 9.4% during the fourth year. So those are the averages from 1936 to 2019. And this is the thing. Everybody gets, we all talk about it. Like if there's some, looking glass we can look for and predict all of this. But
we always want that.
We always want that. But this is just, I think that's an interesting stat.
Yeah. Here's another interesting stat. The S&P 500. If it's been positive since July 31st, and we have a presidential election and the incumbent is running, we talked about this before the show, 85% of the time the incumbent wins if the market's positive from July 31st. Right now we're up about 7% from that July 31st level this year.
It's so all very interesting.
What's going to happen to us after November 3rd? That's a wide open question. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking, let's say either way, no matter who wins the election, there's going to be a ruckus, isn't there, financially?
I think that's what most people think. And it's probably a good generalization. There's going to be a lot of disquiet amongst
regardless.
Our populace.
Regardless.
Yeah. Regardless, either way.
A lot of civil unrest. How's that?
You bet. I'm afraid you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I hope not, but 31% of 1,018 American workers surveyed in January of 2020 anticipate that they will retire at the age of 70 or later. And this is from the Employment Benefit Research Institute in the 2020 Retirement Confidence Survey. But if you've been listening to any of the radio ads we're running right now, that just simply is not true. The majority of retirees, 60%, will retire sooner than planned. So 60% of those people are wrong.
But by the same token, this is, virus related. I think we will learn from this. I learned that I don't want to retire quite as quick as I wanted to because I got bored. When the virus came along and we couldn't do anything and our social lives were clipped and for a lot of people their jobs were lost either temporarily or permanently, it was boring to me and it made me think, like, do I really want to get out of the work world because there's not as much as I thought on the other side?
Well, that is so cool, Colleen. Mm-hmm. So you really learned. You actually thought this through and said, this isn't so hot after all, huh?
Yeah, my sister's visiting, and she's a little bit younger than I am, but we were talking about retirement, and she said yesterday, well, when are you gonna retire? And I said, if you'd have asked me that a year ago, I would have said ASAP. Hmm. I just want to hang out and have a good time, and now I'm like, I don't really want to yet.
It's not all it's cracked up to be for
no.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so even though crude oil is produced in 32 U.S. states, just two states, North Dakota and Texas, are responsible for 52% of the nation's crude oil production, and that's from Energy Information Administration. Well, speaking of going back to school, there are an estimated 19.7 million college students, both undergraduates and graduate students, attending college for the school year that began this fall. Unexpectedly, that total is down just 2% from the prior school year, and this is from the National Center for Education Statistics, and I think that's pretty interesting.
Yes. I think it's great. You know, people are on an education path and they stayed on it. You bet.
So this is also another interesting stat. This one made me laugh. I don't know why. The pandemic pushed the percentage of adults 18 to 29 living with a parent to 52% as of the end of July 2020. Surprisingly, the percentage of adults 18 to 29 living with a parent at the end of January 2020, so before COVID, was 46%. And this is from the Pew Research Center.
Still pretty high.
Pretty high.
I don't know. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Mommy, are you really going to make me clean my room?
What's for dinner?
Yeah, well, that basically sums it up. I'd move home from my parents' bathtub. They've got an amazing setup. It's like a mini spa, but
it's all about the amenities.
It's about the amenities, yeah. I think it is tough, to their credit. It is tough when you get this massive debt from a degree that doesn't equate to a job, and then you have to take a job outside of your degree so you don't get paid as much, and round it goes. Here's one last Shea stat, and then we'll be done. 50% of U.S. counties have experienced six or fewer COVID-19-related deaths as of September 23rd, 2020. 27% of U.S. counties have had zero or just one COVID-19 death as of Wednesday, September 23rd. And that's from the USA Facts.
All right, Heidi, eight things you need to know about your inherited IRA.
That's right. So we have some points, and these are for people who inherit IRAs, and this is for non-spouse beneficiaries. And anybody who's not a spouse who inherits an IRA. Spouses get special rules, so that would be a different discussion. And this applies both to Roth IRAs and traditional IRAs. So when you inherit those, you should consider all your options before you do anything with the inherited IRA, because that money within the account will be taxed on the way out. You don't want to take any distributions unless you're sure that's what you want, because you could end up with an unanticipated tax consequence if you take out a significant portion of those assets. So an unwanted or unneeded distribution is a mistake that can't be undone. You can't put it back in. So you want to be careful before you take it out. Think it through. Think about those ramifications. Another tip is you cannot contribute to an inherited IRA. So if you inherit an IRA and you have this account, but say you already have an IRA of your own, you cannot merge those two funds together. You can't commingle those two funds. They have to remain separate.
Why?
Now that's the cream of the coffee. They don't want you to put those together because they have significant separate rules. But if those are put together, then you blow up both accounts. That's not a good deal.
Oh, dear. So how are people supposed to know these things?
Yeah,
well, they listen to new retirement radio
and they find them out. I don't know that I would know that without you guys. The things that you never knew that you needed to know, things that you never even thought of, you need to know.
You never knew you needed to know.
Right. And you do need it.
So another tip is you can transfer that IRA. So if you have a beneficiary IRA and maybe it's at your parents' advisor and that's not your advisor, you can do a trustee-to-trustee transfer from one custodian to another. So you do have that flexibility, and you can change the assets held within that IRA to meet more your specification or what you feel comfortable investing in.
So trustee-to-trustee transfer simply means that you're transferring it from XYZ beneficiary IRA to ABC beneficiary IRA direct. So you're not receiving the funds. It's going direct and maintaining its tax-exempt or tax-deferred status.
Yep. So here's a tip. that you may not know, and that is that you may be able to do a QCD from that inherited IRA.
What's a QCD, Heidi?
A QCD is a qualified charitable distribution, Dennis, and that is when you take the money in the account, and if you want to donate it to a charity or a nonprofit, you have that money transferred directly from the IRA to the charity, and then you never have to claim that income on your taxes, and you can avoid the tax.
We almost sound like a couple of nerds, don't we, Shane?
Oh, no.
But just remember, you need to be over 70 and a half to do that. You cannot convert an inherited IRA. So say you inherited a traditional beneficiary IRA, you cannot convert those funds to a beneficiary Roth. That is not an option that's available to you with an inherited IRA. Whereas your own IRA, that is an option. You could convert that to a Roth. So that's not available when you inherit it.
On conversions, too, just to make a note of that, there is no limitation on conversions, either age or income level. If you're thinking about converting an IRA to a Roth, there are no limitations. The only limitation is being aware of the tax that you're going to have to pay on that conversion. That's the consideration, all right? And obviously some other things, too, age and that sort of thing. But the main part of it is the tax. All right, go ahead, Heidi.
Okay, so you will be subject to RMDs, and RMDs are the required minimum distributions. Now, there was a little bit change in the law in some recent legislation. Previous to 2020, if you inherited an IRA, you could take a RMD based on your longevity. But the new law says that once you inherit an IRA, you have 10 years to get all the money out. So it's not going to give you a specific amount that you have to take every year, but everything has to be out in the 10th year. So if you don't take anything out, then you have to take the entire lump sum out at the end of 10 years.
So it has to be out of there, emptied by the end of the 10th.
Mm-hmm. And this matters to people because it could bump them into different tax brackets where people used to want to stretch this out over a lifetime and it felt more manageable. But say you inherit $5 million. Let's just say it
just
happens.
Say it.
A girl can dream, Colleen. taking that out in 10 years, you need to work on
impact. Right.
Yes. And you might want to spread it out over many years instead of waiting till that final year. So you want to be thinking of these things ahead of time so that you can make the proper planning. Another tip is your distributions may be taxable, but there will be no penalty. So say you're under 59 and a half and you inherit an IRA and you have a beneficiary IRA, you are not restricted to that 59 and a half age. You can take money out at any age. You will pay taxes if it's a traditional form, but you won't have that penalty, the 10% penalty that you would have if you took that money out of your own IRA and you were under 59.
The maze of retirement rules. And it's interesting. That may be then one of the first places that you draw emergency funds and or use, you know, there's the Kubota sitting next to the road, whatever it might be. That may be a better place to draw those funds for an investment for your future, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay. I bought a pop-up. Does that count as an investment?
It could.
I think that's great.
I'm really pumped about that, by the way.
I would be, too. I have always thought a pop-up would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know.
Have you used it yet?
Not yet. I had to get the hitch on and, you know, my
she
car.
She has to learn how to back up.
I got
to
learn how to back that up. My neighbor, Carl, is going to help me because...
And go practice somewhere where you can't run over anything.
Yeah, definitely not my driveway for the beginning. Anyway, sorry. Back to you, Heidi.
No worries. So the final tip I have for you is that you should name your own beneficiary. So when you inherit an IRA and it becomes your beneficiary IRA, you're allowed to name your beneficiary. So if something happened to you, you can direct who would receive that money next. So keep that in mind. More and more people will be running into this as people age and have more IRAs. And they'll be received by their beneficiaries, and then they'll have to deal with some of these rules.
A lot of that going on. Lots of beneficiary IRAs. They're growing like hotcakes. So big changes. Do we need to take another break here, Colleen?
We do not, but okay, you have three minutes to wrap it up, folks.
All right. Additional Secure Act guidance. The Secure Act changed a lot in things regarding IRAs. The next one is IRA contributions are allowed after age 70 and a half. So, Colleen, you're thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, I want to work until maybe part-time until I'm 72. You could theoretically still make an IRA contribution after age 70 and a half. The previous rule through the end of 19 was that once you hit the age of 70 and a half, in that year, you could not make an IRA contribution.
Right.
Regular IRA, you could still make a Roth, not a regular, which is deductible for tax purposes. Well, now, one of the most more unpopular IRA rules has always been the restriction around 70 and a half. The Secure Act eliminated this rule beginning in 2020 and has permitted individuals who are age 70 and a half or older to make traditional IRA contributions. So it just adds another wrinkle, another opportunity for someone thinking about saving after age 70 and a half. Even
but
though
you need earned income.
Yeah, it has to be earned income. You're still working from whatever source. Penalty-free distributions for birth or adoption. The Secure Act has added a new 10% penalty exception for birth or adoption. This exception is limited to $5,000 per child. So the more children you have, the more you're allowed to withdraw. Silence. Okay.
I don't know.
And the exception applies to IRAs and defined contribution plans. We've got 9 children. Never mind.
I was thinking the pop-up can fit like 5 more, but that's too many.
It's going to be stretching things a bit.
Someone's got to sleep on the dining room area. That's
no pun intended, stretching things a bit. Someone heard that, I'm sure.
All right, you guys. So you can walk everyone through all of this stuff with an appointment, a consultation. And how can people do that?
Call us at 231-947-3992. Meg can help you out with that. You meet initially with Heidi. And she can walk you through what we offer, walk you through your questions, concerns. Ask. The first hour is no obligation, no cost. And if you do want to sign up for that class, proutfinancialdesign.com, and just look for the retirement planning today
icon. You can email me if you need help, Shea, S-H-E-A, at proutfinancialdesign.com.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.